Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 465, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Colin Baker from Back from the Future. How you doing, Colin?
Jeff, how are you?
I am doing excellent.
Me too. And I'm absolutely really delighted to be on your show. As I mentioned to you earlier, I was cycling around Ireland recently on a sort of a personal voyage of just trying to get away on my own and see what we have to offer in Ireland, because I've often been away and I haven't really traveled around Ireland much. But I was fed up with my cheesy 80s music soundtrack, and I decided I'd look around the podcasts on my iPhone, and found your podcast and was absolutely gripped by it. It was lovely to hear from like-minded techs, over the other side of the pond. And I found a lot of encouragement, a lot of answers to questions I've had over the years, a lot of support, and a lot of community, if you like, in the true meaning of the word, with people through your podcast. So well done.
Oh, I appreciate that. And that's what we aim to do, is to help educate and edify people in what they do on a regular basis, because a lot of times there's not a lot of things out there that you can go to and talk about what we do on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes it's very frustrating. And I'll be honest with you, I love doing podcasts because, well, quite honestly, I love to talk. So it works well for me.
I think it's always nice to do something you're good at.
I appreciate that.
That's like me and tree climbing. I just love to climb trees.
Oh, that'll be a story for another time.
Okay, that's another podcast. That's the tree climbing podcast.
Colin, why don't we start off with, basically, how did you get started in this industry, and what are some of the things that you went through as you were growing your business? I know you have a story that you've told time and time again, but I think for this audience, they would love to hear your background.
Well, thank you very much. I'm always honored that people would be in any way interested. I was very much the geek, the nerd at school. I'm 35 now, so I would have been in school in the late 90s. And back then, I don't know, your generation, you look 21, but then, you know, maybe you're not. back in school, I was very much that's broken, Colin will fix it. And I think I probably share that with a lot of your listeners, that they grew up as the fixer, and they grew up enjoying the aspect of repairing and improving and technology and gadgets and computers. And, you know, in some cases, people obviously moved off into programming or the creative side. Some people stuck with, you know, the bare bones of pulling things apart and putting them back together again in a better way. I was the pure geek back in school, and I did enjoy it because there was a lot of other subjects I really wasn't very good at. So I enjoyed that there was something that I was known for. It was almost part of my identity. And my younger brother by 4 years, when I was 21 or 22, I just finished college. Naturally enough, with bundles of enthusiasm and zero wisdom, as is probably fairly normal for certainly for me at that age, I desperately wanted to start a technology shop. I didn't really know what form that would take or what way it would go. Would I be fixing more, selling more? And it started really as just somebody who loves food starting a restaurant.
Okay.
So I didn't really have the other bolt-in skills that you actually need to run a business. But I kind of had the vision, sort of a blurry, fantastical vision of this sort of tech store where my friends would come in and my friends' friends would come in, and Colin would fix everything, and then they'd be joyously dancing and prancing out of my store. And I would make tons and tons of money and open 1,000 stores across the world and be held up like Richard Branson, some sort of tech golden boy. And the enthusiasm was there. The passion was there. But I was soon to find that the skill set was not there. And the consistency was not there, and the I had the distractibility of a puppy dog. So I guess I focused very heavily in the first while on the things that I liked, rather than attending to the brass tacks of running a business. And that's how we started. The name Back from the Future came when myself and the brother were drunk one night, and we were just thinking, and we were talking about the film Back to the Future, and just the general cheesy outlook of the future and how that kind of reflected our own attitude and perspective on things. So hence the name Back from the Future. We started, we fumbled, we toiled, we fought, and even by year two, year three, we were, I suppose technically we were consistently bankrupt, and consistently making a loss, and really we didn't have 2 cents to rub together. And in fact, when we opened, I had I couldn't afford to buy actual stock of computers, but mouse mats at the time were very popular, and they had a good margin, and they were very cheap, and they filled the wall quite nicely. So I bought a lot of mouse mats, and the particular company who supplied mouse mats gave me credit, believe it or not.
The wow.
So very quickly, as I say, I found that, for example, I didn't like bookkeeping or accounts or mathematics. And I very quickly learned that you cannot run a business of any type, of any size, without a firm focus on the brass tacks, on the money that you've invested, on the whatever system you decide to operate, be it an online QuickBooks system, or a simple journal of notes of expenditure, or a really cheap 50 euro till cash register, or a fancy system, whatever it might be. It needs to be something that you focus on and that you understand and that you use correctly. That is not something I did. I spent, believe it or not, about 7,000 or 8,000 euro at the time, and this is 14 years ago, on a hugely advanced till system with server control and dial-in support. And because I kind of figured, well, we're going to be massive in 2 years. I mean, we need to start as
sure.
We continue. And really, in hindsight, if I could travel back in my DeLorean to 21-year-old Colin, I would shake him and say, please don't waste that 7,000 euro on that till system. Buy a 100 euro Casio or something. Because it really, it served to do nothing but confuse me. And as I say, I did not bolt in that skill. I ignored that skill. I delegated where I could that skill. And of course, if you delegated, you still don't truly understand what you've made, what you can make, what your value is, what your margin is, and what your costs are. And I hate to be boring about things, but in terms of starting a business and running a business, that is the veins and capillaries of the business. And to my mind, it cannot function without an understanding on a day-by-day, if not hour-by-hour, understanding of what you're making. To the tune of nowadays, in order to be, and to keep on top of things, I can tell you, and I check the bank accounts every couple of hours, I would tell you to within 10 euro what we owe, what we are owed, what we're about to spend over the next 24, 48, 72, 1 week and month. I know exactly what tax we owe. And it's not that I'm blowing a trumpet and saying, aren't I great? I'm saying that is what you need to know. Whether it's a coffee shop or a computer store, or you're a loan ranger and you're going out repairing computers, you do need to know what your running costs are, what you can make, and where you are making as well.
Well, I think that's a great point, Colin, because a lot of us start off as basically we're technicians. And I think a lot of us have the similar same story where we were the fixer. We fixed things for friends and family. And then all of a sudden we said, well, I really enjoy this. I'm going to go into business for myself. and most of us not knowing a thing, which is fine. That's not a bad place to start. The problem is when you're 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road and you still don't know anything about running a business, then therein lies the problem. And you really need to take stock in some of the things that we bring on the show, guests like yourself, and some of the things we talk about on our live show, to get the information so that you can be better at what you do from a business standpoint. And if you want to continue to be doing it as a technician, that's fine, as long as you're willing to learn the other stuff, or you hire those other things out and get a basic understanding of what you need to do. Because I think that's great, and I think most businesses nowadays still don't have a blow-by-blow view of what their business looks like on a regular basis.
But what you just said there is fundamental. I'd push it even further and say that I have seen and watched businesses with good concepts, good skills, good marketing. I have seen them, and plenty of customers, and I have seen them fail as a result of the employer, the owner, not understanding the fundamentals of what he owes, what he's borrowed, what he has to pay back, and what the ongoing costs are.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, like we both just said, fundamentals. And I think that there's a learning curve that you get when you're in business. And it's okay to learn on the job. But going back to your till system, you bought a $7,000 till, which for anybody that wants to know what that means in the U.S., it's a cash register.
Sorry, is that you don't use that word. There's going to be a lot of those.
And that's perfectly fine. I'm a little older, so I actually know what a till is. It's actually an older term word. But maybe it's still used nowadays. I don't know. But for the modern young kids out there, cash register. And so the problem is with those great systems that are already put together, it's only as great as the information you're willing to put into it. And therein lies the problem. Greatest notebooks or electronic ways of categorizing things. But if you don't put the proper information in, or you don't know what that proper information is, you're kind of lost. And you've spent a lot of money on something that you're basically not really using for what it was intended for.
Or indeed, if it's too complex, in which my one, bear in mind, the shop when we opened it, or the store, as you guys call it, it was just me and a sign that said back in 5 minutes. I could only afford just me for the first year. So I got to actually, there was a sort of a, not a homeless guy, but he was near enough homeless hanging around, and he'd come into the shop and he'd stand around, and I actually welcomed him because he'd stand around all day, and at least he served the purpose of being a body on the floor and looking at things and maybe just saying to people, well, hang on a second, Colin will be with you right now, or he'd keep an eye on security, because to be quite frank, I was in Dublin city centre, and the first 2 years I was robbed blind. I lost stuff every time I bought stock. I couldn't afford to put in proper cabinets with locks on them.
Okay.
So anything I bought, I was very naive. So I'd always think, he looks a bit rough. But, you know, I don't want to be mean to him. I don't want to be rude. I'm going to assume that he's a nice person and he's not going to steal. And then someone would distract me. And sure enough, some chap that looked like a tow rag actually turned out to be a tow rag and would steal and run out the door and leg it down the road. So I suppose there was a lot of naivety in the first couple of years.
Well, you know, not only that, but going back to business tactics, if you look at a lot of your big box stores, especially in the U.S., probably anywhere, but if you look at those stores, they actually have a built-in theft cost. In other words, they know pretty close to what's going to be, how much stuff is going to be stolen that year and what it's going to cost them.
They've actually a percentage tied into the budget and to the margin. Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. And so to come down to that type of detail, most of us in the smaller shops or working out of our homes don't take the time to look at that. Well, I guess you're working out of your home. I mean, I would dare
ideally,
somebody to,
happen.
Yeah. I would dare somebody to steal something from here, but okay.
in summary, I think, Jeff, on that point, we often use phrases like, you know, develop your niche. I think you guys call it niche.
Yeah.
That word just so annoying. It's niche. Yeah. It's niche. Please, from now on.
All my Canadian friends hate the every time I say niche or niche too. Niche. So
yeah. I have no doubt, because I think it's from French or something. So I'm sure it's not niche. That doesn't sound very French.
Well, maybe that's the reason I say niche instead of niche.
just to annoy them. Yeah, brilliant. Indeed, I love it, Jeff.
I love I love all the French people. I'm just saying.
yeah, just to clarify. But I think we also say, follow your niche, follow your passion,
right.
Do what you love. And I always say it to young entrepreneurs and people with business ideas and that, it's great to be fantastical and follow what you love. But unfortunately, and I'll give you an example, there's a man called, I think it's okay to say, but he's a chef in Ireland.
Okay.
We'll just call him CG. That's his initials. And he's an award-winning chef, and he's an incredible chef. I mean, if you taste some of this guy's food, it would make your eyes water, and it would make you think of, a combination of mother's cooking and, sailing into the sunlight. It's kissing a beautiful girl all at the same time. It's absolutely gorgeous food. And I think he's probably in his 40s or 50s now, he has a trail of disaster in his wake. He opens restaurants, he makes beautiful food, he employs people, he doesn't pay them, and then he can't pay them, and then this customer's, kind of mess with his head, and he can't stand the customers, and he can't stand the accountants and the bean counters and the bankers, and he does what he loves. But he's forgotten to bolt in those fundamental needs and requirements and skills.
Right.
So it's great to do what you love, but unfortunately, you have to look across the spectrum, step back from it, and temper it with an understanding of those fundamentals. And the first one being the financials, exactly, to the day, to the hour. And by all means, contract out the actual bookkeeping, the actual accounts every year. I don't know about over there, but over here we have to have chartered accountants put together our books and post them to the government so that the revenue can take their taxes and ensure that you're paying everything. That, by all means, hand that out. But general basic cash flow, what you're making, what you're losing, what you're taking in tomorrow, what you're spending tonight, all those things, by all means, in your personal life, you can go out and be flahula, but in business, you must be cautious, careful, and mindful of everything that's going on.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And it's a good place to start, is knowing what's coming in your business and what's going out.
Exactly. And that's once I grasped the fundamentals of that, I actually, to be honest, Jeff, what happened to me was that the accountant came to my dad. And of course, that's not meant to do that. He's a different person, and he meant to have this privacy thing going on. But he came to my dad because he'd been trying to ring me for weeks to tell me, look, the business is out of money. Not only is it out of money, it owes lots of money. It is bankrupt, and you need to close the doors and address this. And of course, I had head in the sand syndrome. I was ignoring the cues. I was ignoring the phone calls. I was saying, oh, tell them I'm in a meeting. At that stage, I'd taken on a few people. And luckily enough, the accountant took it upon himself to ring my dad, tell my dad, listen, David Collin is floundering, and he won't acknowledge my calls. He won't acknowledge the state of affairs. And my dad took it upon himself. And of course, when you put your head in the sand like that, you become very, very stubborn. And when people, try to contact you and push towards you and try and alert you to these things, sometimes you fight even harder not to hear. And he called me and he said, close the shop. And he told me to come over and see him. And he told me he was ashamed of me and that he would disown me. And that it was, now, none of this was actually true, but all he was trying to do was
get your attention,
get my attention and just tear me down. Because sometimes you build yourself up and you've got this head on you that you think you can do anything, and you think, oh, well, if I, after today, I'll make more money and we'll pay that off. And then you really just, the only thing I can call it is putting your head in the sand. And luckily, after genuinely being, crying my eyes out, being terribly upset, realizing I'd been a failure, we didn't, luckily enough, that was when I listened. And that was when I learned my primarily the second real trick to running a business, which was humility. Realizing that you don't know and nobody knows it all. You could have done very well in school. You could be very well read, very well liked. You could be an awesome technician, but there are lots of huge gaps in what you understand, what you know, and that's just humanity and human nature. And I had to develop the humility to realize I don't have a clue. And I from then started to take my dad's advice, my friend's advice. My dad said what we should do is, you know, ring around to friends and say, listen, you know, things are hard. And I look, we're doing our best here. If there's anything you can think of that you need fixed or you need to buy a printer or anything at all, please give me a shout. And people responded. People actually called Gina Mac, fair play. I'm sorry to hear things are tough. Well, do you know what? I need a printer at the moment for the house. Great. I have a great deal on a printer. I'll even drop it out to your house. And from there, I'd hit sort of ground zero. And from there, I finally acquired the humility to realize I didn't have a clue and to realize that it wasn't me. It was us. It was whoever I was lucky enough to have around me who would support me and help me and guide me. And in some cases it was friends. It was certainly family. And we're never in these things alone. Whether you're a lone technician or you've got 10 stores, whatever it might be, you are wholly dependent on those around you. Your team, your family, your friends, your wife, your girlfriend, your dog, whatever. You are a product of all that. And the humility to go and say, look, I'm finding it hard at the moment. Have you ever had this experience before? Do you know what I can do about this? Or suppliers, I'd bought too much stock in some cases. And going to them and saying, look, I'm really in trouble here. What is there anything you can do to help me? I'll be endlessly indebted to you. And the amount of goodwill I got from doing that really actually rescued me and rescued us, I should say, from failure and from going bankrupt and from probably letting a lot of other people down as well, because we had a lot of bills to pay. So that was kind of my second piece of guidance. I don't know what you think on that, Jeff.
Colin, that's exactly, I love it that you were able to basically, like you said, humble yourself to the point of asking. And a lot of times we don't get because we don't ask.
Yeah.
And that's just a reality of life. Or like you said, you were ashamed, but you had to let that down and say, you know what, we're in trouble here. And there are people around me that do care about what happens to me and what happens in my business. And it's the same thing. It's why we share advice on this show, to help other people know that it doesn't matter what you're going through. You can do it too. And there's people that have gone through it before you, and they can show you the things that they've done just like you have right now. So I think that's awesome.
There's a very good McDonald's ad, I think it is. It's one of the fast food chains, and it tracks the kid as they grow up, and they're sitting opposite each other eating a burger or something, and it's father and daughter. And the daughter is sort of 6 or 7, and she thinks dad's like Superman, and she's really chatting away and telling him everything. And then she's like 12 or 13, and you know, you can see it starting to fade. And then she's 15 or 16, and she thinks dad is the biggest doofus in the entire world. And then even at 20, she's still like, yeah, you're a bit of an idiot. And then, you know, she's sort of whatever, 30 or something, and they're just the best of friends again.
Right.
I guess even the life cycle in business can sometimes be similar. When you start out, you've got this gung-ho bullish. Often people who do start out on their own are of that mindset anyway. I certainly was. And suddenly, you know, as I got through it and made the mistakes, I now realize I'm actually the stupidest person in my business. And I'm probably the last person you should ask to fix something nowadays, because everyone else around me is better. And in terms of asking for advice, literally everybody has a nugget, as you mentioned at the start, a nugget of information and advice and wisdom for you. And as I say, that can be anybody around you. Just be open to it.
Well, you know what they say? They say experience is the best teacher as long as it's somebody else's experience.
Yes, yes. But then I often wonder, Jeff, if I went back, I often think of this, if I could go back, actually 4 years ago, Jeff, we, because of the name of the company, we had our 10-year anniversary for the company, and we'd a little bit of money saved up, and we went to the bank in Ireland, and they said, you know, we've got a great idea for you to have a savings account, and come in and we'll have a cappuccino and we'll talk about it. And I went in, and a 12-year-old met me at the desk, and, you know, we had the chat about the bank account, and I realized, when I actually worked it out, we made about, I don't know, €200 at the end of the year in interest, less taxes, etc. And I had been looking at a DeLorean on eBay at the time from New York. And I'd always wanted to buy a DeLorean. And it actually added up to the exact same money that we had in our savings account. And I bought the DeLorean and had it shipped over. And I often, so we use it for charity events and PR and on TV and whatnot. And I often wonder if I could, because I don't know about you, Jeff. I'd say you're probably the same. I've an imagination. Sometimes I sit there and I stare into space and I imagine myself going to space or traveling back in time or being, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or you know, some super ninja person.
Absolutely.
I'm a big kid. I think we all are. But I imagine myself going back in time and talking to 20-year-old Colin and saying, Colin, listen, you know, great news. I've traveled back in time and you know, I have a few tips for you, you know, things that we've been through and it's just, I'm going to just correct a few things, save you a few quid. And I know probably that Colin, 20-year-old Colin would go, geez, Colin, that's fantastic. Thanks a million for coming back. How did you do that? Yeah, listen, that's great advice. Listen, you're, you know, really, really good for coming back. Thanks, but no thanks. I know what I'm doing. I don't think I'd even listen to the advice of myself back then. And I guess, look, it's a case of, you mentioned that mistakes have to be others, but at the same time, there is no firmer lesson than a mistake that you make yourself. All that you can hope is that the mistakes aren't one way and that you can pick yourself back up afterwards and make things right. And for the most part, I've managed to crawl out of the various messes I've created.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that, too, that sometimes we live the life of the hard knocks where we need to be knocked down a few times or a few notches in order to get back up and learn from that experience. And I would say that for most of us, that's how we learn, especially if you think about going into business for yourself and being an entrepreneur. You're really going to be, most of the time, in my opinion, probably a type A personality. And, you know, very strong, very, like you said in the beginning, bullheaded and yeah, I'm going to do it my way. And I've got better ideas than people that have done it before me. So I'm going to do this. Nobody's thinking about this. I'm going to do something a little different here. And that's all fine. And I think that the other part of it is we need to be dreamers and we need to have that imagination to be able to move forward. But at the same time, there's certain basic things that you need to know. And I'll take it to a car analogy. Okay. Now, most people, I'm not going to say most people, a lot of people don't know how to work on their own cars. Okay. Mm. That's fine. And it's probably gotten even worse over the years because most people will lease their cars. They don't have to work on them, whatever. But you have to know the basics. You have to know how to go to a gas station and put gas where the gas goes. You have to know how to put your key in the ignition to start the car. You have to know where the gas pedal and the brake pedal are in order to drive the car. You have to know that the steering wheel actually moves the car. So those are the basic fundamentals that if you didn't know any of those things, it doesn't matter how great that car is, you wouldn't be able to drive it. And so I think the same thing goes for in business. Have the fundamentals, learn them over time. Not everybody learned to be a great driver right after they got out of driver's ed. That's why insurance costs so much more when you're younger. Yeah. And quite honestly, probably should cost a little bit more when you're older. But that's another story. Because I think sometimes we get so comfortable in doing certain things that we forget some of the basics.
yeah, definitely. Another thing I would lead on to, it's funny, in the early days as regards once I was taking people on, I suppose I, well, I believed in. I don't know if that's the correct term, but I thought that the correct way was the boss and employee methodology. So laying out very specific checklists and very specific targets and ways people should, you know, behave, and you know, very specific times. And also in terms of saving money, so I'd obviously try and pay as little as I could so that we could be as competitive as we could be, etc. And in the last few years, I've learned to do things slightly differently. I've realized that entrepreneurship is not just for the business owner. It's, you can be entrepreneurial, and it's very important that, that people know this. You know, the entrepreneurial word has gotten this magic dust spread across it, where young people now think that, you know, it's the only way to go if you're, if you've got a, you know, a dominant personality, or it's certainly people who are starting off and want to be an entrepreneur. You've got to realize it is not the only way you can go. It's not necessarily the best way to go. There are many nights, many weeks, many months where I rue the day I decided to start things on my own. For the vast majority of the time, I'm absolutely thrilled because it suits me. But it's, I certainly don't think, so for example, our staff, we have four branches, Jeff, and we call them, the branches actually we call Laptop Lab, because it says what we do more, back from the future being the company behind it.
Okay.
And so we call our branches, rather than stores or repair shops, we've always called them labs, because we've always gone for the clinical approach and the clinical look. So our labs are white. We wear white coats. They're bright, very, very bright lights. They're impeccable. Well, we try to make them impeccably clean. The goal is to be able to eat your dinner off the off the counter at the end of the day.
Wow. Okay.
We try desperately to have that lab feel. If there's equipment that's going to make our job slightly easier in terms of, say, BGA reballing or a better soldering equipment or pumps, you know, better screens for looking at schematics, better microscopes, we go for it, because we strive to be. And this is going to sound, you know, maybe a little bit cocky, but we, our drive is to be the best at what we do in the whole world. Now, I'll have to explain that to you. That's not that we ever will be or ever can be, or that there's any judge of who's the best in the whole world. But our trajectory, the basis on which we make every decision, the basis on which we decided last week to handle the disposal of electronic waste, the reason we decide on a particular uniform, on a particular code of conduct, code of dress, code of wearing your hair, is based on our, on the premise or the desire to be the best at what we do. And I think all of your listeners, behind it all, they strive to be the very best at what they do. That's not a competitive thing. It's not a, you know, douse the others kind of thing. It's about being proud of what you do, about getting ever better at what you do, at moving forward rather than backward. Someone once told me that you will every day, Jeff, you, and you know this, you will either get a tiny bit better or a tiny bit worse, not whatever, but you will never be exactly the same tomorrow as you are today.
I agree with that.
You've got to make the decision. Make it, rather than just let that sort of happen as it happens, decide to be better tomorrow.
And I think that's one of the things that I stress all the time. You know, the biggest room in our lives is the room for improvement. We can always improve on something, whether it's how we fix something, how we look at something, how we decide to do our business, take our business into the future. The problem is, a lot of times people will get stuck into doing things that they've always done the same way. And then a lot of times what will end up happening, and they don't even see it, is they will complain, and my customer this and my customer that, instead of, I'm sorry, I have a military background, and I didn't have a choice of whether or not I needed to get up and move forward. It was, really wasn't a choice. I either move forward or I would stay there laying down in the ground. And
bizarrely, Jeff, that background has been very much to your credit in this industry. Sometimes I wish I had a military background.
I just, you're going to get up and you're going to do whatever it is you need to do, and you're going to learn from each and every experience. And that's what we need to do. And so I love that you want to be the best, because even though it's not really attainable in the whole sense, but it is something to always strive for, to make yourself better each and every day.
I said it to our team, and we don't really have staff or a hierarchy, believe it or not. We all wrestle for the same goal, and we all try to attain the same standards. And there is no sense. In fact, the butt of most people's jokes is me. So if there is any lowest denominator in my business, it's actually me. But I mean, some of the pictures that they put up of me, like, it's really embarrassing.
Oh boy.
You should see it. I guess what I'm saying is I said to one of them, I told him this plan to be the best at what we do. And this particular chap, Martin is his name, and he heads up a branch of Laptop Lab in a very kind of a very salubrious area of Dublin called Donnybrook. And it's one of the sort of nicer, posher, leafier areas. And he's very exacting in what he does. And he doesn't just take things on face value. He'll sort of analyze them straight away. And I said, we're going to be the best at, we want to be the best at what we do in the world, Martin. And he's about 6 foot six, and he looked down at me and he said, he had a big queer look on his face. And he said, but this is not possible, Colin. Who will be the judge? What is the parameters of the competition? And he's from Poland. And I said, that's not what it's about, Martin. Forget the parameters. There are no judges. Just think about it. And about an hour later, I got a phone call from saying, Colin, we could be the best. Someday we could be the best. And it was just that idea of the goal in the distance that you'll never get to. The sun that you'll look at and enjoy the warmth of. It's not about getting there. It's about the trajectory. It's about heading in a direction. And that's kind of where why we decided on that sort of mantra. But as I say, it's one where if you say it in the wrong company after the wrong amount of drinks, someone will think you're a cocky gift, you know.
I think that's great advice for people to follow. And it's what I talk about in business most of the time. Is business to me is really 90% mindset and about 10% skill. Now, there will be people out there that will disagree with me, and that's perfectly fine. You have your right to be wrong. But I'm just going to say that the reality is...
I'm picking up so many nuggets here, Jeff. It's incredible.
The reality is, you know, we are what we do. And so I love the ability to make ourselves better every day.
Well, I thought that was most relevant here, Jeff, because as I say, any of your guests and the feeling I got through the podcast while I was cycling around was one of great passion for repairs, for fixing, for solving people's problems. There was no, you know, the odd time in Ireland, you might get, you know, and we'll all have our bad days and our bad weeks where we're kind of, we love to sit down and have a moan about, you know, particular customers, or you know, a bad online review, or you know, someone who wants a refund on everything that you've done for them, and they just don't understand how much you've put in, and you know, we've all had those days.
It's what I call pity parties.
Pity parties, yeah, and in a sense, sometimes I think you might need a little bit of it. You know, you do need to have that pint and the moan.
Sure,
but it's you definitely don't want to dwell too long in those waters. Our customers are, you know, what we try to do at the end. We have a diary, an old-fashioned printed diary that we had pre-printed and custom-made ourselves. And at the end of each, and there's different sections for leads and for phone calls to return and stuff like that. But at the end, there's two sections, and it's a requirement that those sections are filled every day of our 6 days a week opening in each branch. One of them says MIB today, which is not Men in Black, nothing to do with aliens. It's make it better. So what did we better today about our branch? Now, that could be changing a bulb in the ceiling. It could be dusting down the top shelf that hasn't seen dusting in 2 months. It could be designing a sign for outside. It could be I I don't know, I scrub down the stairs or something. It's just one tiny thing that you make better about the branch. That's one thing. And then the other thing at the end, and remember that has to be done every day. So that six things get better every week about each branch. That's 24 nice. Things that every, you know, and it builds up very quickly. As we know, time flies. The other thing down there is customer delight today. I actually got that from my sister who works in Slack, you know, the fantastic app Slack. I don't know if you use it. Absolutely love it, by the way. They have this very Google-like company, and they have an expert, or they have someone whose job it is. They're the, I think it's the manager of customer delight. That's their job. That's their actual job. All they do, what do you do for your job? I manage the delight of customers. And nice. In one sense, it sounds, you know, really kind of googly. It's like the, you know, the ball pit or the free cocktail bar in Google that we all, you know, anecdotally hear about. And we think, God, that sounds fantastic. You kind of think, is it real? It sounds too good to be true. It actually is. They have it. And just somebody whose job it is to randomly go around and delight customers. Now, we don't have somebody, we don't have the budget to have one person going around randomly giving Skittles to customers. But
that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And if I ever do have that budget, I'll definitely, maybe you'd be interested in the job.
I love Skittles. So I don't know that they would actually get to the customers.
I'll bear that in mind when I'm sending your Christmas box.
There you go.
But the other thing is just customer delight today. So who did we absolutely delight? And obviously we strive to delight everybody, but by having that there that we articulate at the end of the day with a pen on paper and we have to tick that box, it focuses us, number one, on making sure that we do that and keeps us, our mindset in there, rather than thinking, oh, that terrible man who came in and shouted us down because such and such didn't happen quickly enough for him or whatever. Instead of focusing on that, it focuses on the joy that we've created in a customer that day. And it actually is, we all know, and all your listeners have delighted people.
Absolutely. Before.
And that's one of the biggest benefits of this business and this industry. Who of your listeners has not had people crying at lost files or people who've literally bought them beers or, you know, hugged them for 2 minutes because they saved their laptop from water damage or saved their assignment for college or managed to recover the photos of their child. We get to be amazing to people.
Yes.
Quite often in our industry, and it is something to be proud of. That little reminder at the end of our diary page is about keeping the focus on that and reminding ourselves of the value of that.
That is awesome, Colin. And for those that don't know, I just want to go back a little bit and talk about what Colin was saying there as far as the pen and paper. So for those of you that don't know what that is basically this writing instrument that ink comes out of, and you can put it down on a flat piece of usually white, maybe sometimes yellow or different colored paper. And it's very, very thin. And you just kind of, you move it and you can draw actual letters and put notes however you want. And so,
but Jeff, does that support USB 3?
That's true.
Is it Windows based?
And it's probably a tad bit slower.
But the gas thing is, for all the BBSs we created, all the apps we have, Slack, everything else, there's nothing quite as quick when you've got three customers in front of you, two phones ringing, computers to repair, iPhones to repair, whatever else is going on, then grabbing a pen from in front of you and scribbling someone's name and phone number and just a word on what they're looking for at the speed of lightning that you can barely read, but it only takes you, in the time I've written out, you know, Jeff rings, Jeff wants to ask about a laptop for his business or a refurbished desktop or something, and I said, Jeff, listen, I'm just in front of a customer at the moment. Can I give you a shout back? Jeff, what's your phone number? In the time that it takes me to write your phone number and name down there, I've just about got past the password lock on my iPhone. I've just about, I can click, find my app, my Slack or whatever else, It's just about to load up. I can't quite do it with one hand. I ideally need two hands on the keyboard. It's whatever works. Technology is about whatever works. Now, for me, the vast majority of solutions are tech. We use Slack. We use Repair Shopper. We love our tech in every sense of the word. My bike is electric. My car is electric. Everything I do, if I can find a gadgety way, my front door lock is fingerprint. Everything. If I can find a tech way to do something, I'll do it the tech way. But I cannot find a better way of scribbling notes during a busy day and even being creative and planning things out and writing out lists than that flat piece of white stuff that you've just spoken about.
And I'll tell you what, I laugh because it is so true. And right here on my desk in front of me, I have a pen and a pad of paper because it is so fast for me to jot things down. And if I need to move that information to a digital format later, I can do it when I have the time.
Yeah. Or you could take a picture of it, which is what I do nowadays.
There you go. And just, yeah.
I'm doing exactly the same. We're so retro, Jeff.
Well, the other thing too is, like when a customer comes to me or I go to them, I actually make them fill out a form, an inked printed form that they actually have to take a pen and fill in their name, address, and all that kind of stuff. And there's a couple reasons. Number one, with cell phone technology nowadays, it's very, very hard to hear some customers. The cell phone is horrible. So a lot of times when somebody's telling you something, you don't get it down right away, or you get it down wrong because you think they might have said an E when they said an A or whatever. And so a lot of times it's easier for the customer just to fill that out, and then I can go back and look at it before they leave and say, what's that right there? Mm. Oh, that's an A. Oh, okay, cool. And I can already correct the problems before I get back to the office and basically input the information. So therefore, I'm not having to call the customer and say, listen, what was your email address again? Or maybe worse, one of the digits on their phone number was wrong. And then all of a sudden I'm scrambling and going, okay, I don't know how to get hold of them.
Also, that notepad is not going to run out of battery. Or famously, I was doing a presentation to 400 small business owners last year down in the Midlands of Ireland. And I love my ThinkPads, and I had a ThinkPad X series, and I turned it on, Windows 7 Pro, to do my presentation about 10 minutes before, plenty of time.
Wow, you are retro.
Oh, you're doing retro.
Windows 7 Pro, yeah.
Windows 7 Pro. Oh, but it's the most stable, reliable.
Whatever.
What's the point in changing? It works.
No, I agree.
And you can do stuff with it. Is proper stuff. Oh, we won't go into it. We all have our favorites. And as you say, we can all be wrong.
That's right.
But I went to turn it on and go in and do my presentation. And my presentation's on the ThinkPad, and I've got my cable and everything. And updates. Windows.
Oh.
One of 3,200,000 updates. Do not turn off your computer. You can do damn all else. You're just going to have to watch this for the next 18 hours. I was convinced I turned off updates and somebody maliciously turned them on right before I
did
my presentation. But, yes, computers are great and we love tech, obviously. But there is a place, as you quite rightly stated there, like when you go out to a customer and you have that sheet for them to fill out, there is definitely a place where, do you know what? Paper can trump technology.
Absolutely, I agree. Oh, well, Colin, I know we're getting towards the hour mark here, but I want to go into a little bit now. You alluded to a couple things in the beginning, and I love your background. I love your story, and I love the great nuggets of information you've brought today.
Thanks, Jeff.
But now one of the things that you actually do, you're on TV.
Yeah, well, we very early on, about a year into working away in the business, I got my dad actually. My dad actually has a DIY hardware store. Do you call it DIY over there? So tools and hardware and things for tidying.
We don't call it. Yeah, we don't call it DIY, but I understand what you mean because there are the what I would call the big box warehouse type stores that have the.
Well, this is where.
But I like the local
Yes.
You call it the mom and pop stores.
We in Ireland, we have the same kind of arrangement, big box stores and then some small stores. What's happening now is that stores like that are coming together a lot more under more unified brands, more collaborative, like co-op kind of arrangements, so that they can get the big box pricing and the big box branding and marketing, but maintain, you know, being owned by mama and papa or whatever it might be. But mom and dad kind of raised us in a DIY shop in a mama's and papa's store, as you call it. My dad was asked to pop on TV3 in Ireland on breakfast television called Ireland AM, and to talk about one Christmas the top 10 DIY Christmas gifts. So, you know, your lawnmowers, your strimmers, your cordless drills, whatever. And he got a great idea, and he put it all together as a script, and he was invited, and he thought, this is going to be brilliant for business for Christmas. And I was about 21. My younger brother was there as well, Wesley. And we all had a sort of a little plan to, I was going to saw something, and Wesley was going to screw something in with a new Black & Decker thing, and Dad was going to say the words, and we practiced it out in front of Mum like 100 times. And then we went in on the morning to do the live TV piece, and suddenly the director said, what's going on? There can only be one of you. And I said, no, there's three. No, you only have one of you. That's just the way it is. It's just one of you. And the next minute, my dad and my brother disappeared. They'd gone out of the car and locked the doors. And I got a text saying, look, you know, you don't have to do it. Let's go. You know, that wasn't the agreement. And they just, because the things had been changed and it was 5 minutes to go. And I said, look, I'll do it. I mean, it's no big deal. And I went and I did it, and they said it was good. And I think being in business and being, again, like your listeners, anyone who's ever done retail or service particularly will know you're kind of on a stage. You are talking to new people every 10 minutes, every 5 minutes, whatever. You've got to change your tune. You've got to watch your words. You can't be hesitating and pausing and tripping over things. It's very similar to being on the radio, being on a podcast, or being on TV. And luckily enough, that stood to me. I was asked to come back, and I said, well, yeah, great. But actually, I've got a store called Back from the Future, and they love the name because obviously it brought up nice nostalgic memories for them as well. And I was invited on ever since, and I've been on every 2 weeks on Breakfast TV in Ireland talking about gadgets and gizmos and whatever. Sometimes it's whimsical stuff, Mother's Day gift ideas. Sometimes it's serious things involving internet security and how to keep your personal information safe. Sometimes it's business related for starting up small businesses and how to economize and set up systems that are more efficient and more economical and cheaper to establish. And it's very much, I know you talked about leveraging PR before in a podcast. It was how I was able to get away with not advertising in the conventional sense all through the years. So I've never really had to push Google AdWords. I've never really had to advertise and spend money on it on the radio or TV. I've never had to even put a whole lot in. I mean, we have a website. It's an okay website. It does what it's meant to do. But a lot of people would come to us through the, remember, what we actually do on TV isn't necessarily commercial. It's not necessarily things we sell. In most cases, none of the things I feature on television are anything to do with what we sell. We actually, the reason for that, and I don't get paid for going on TV. I go in the morning, I make a plan a couple of days beforehand, I get a couple of props, or I get a couple of samples from the suppliers, or the distributors, the manufacturers. So I plan it ahead, I go in, I demonstrate and talk about it, and I go back to my business. And there's an element of trust, of the identity of oh yeah, you know, your man on the telly, the gadget guy, he'll know. And it's our job to make sure that we do know and that we can follow up. And when we do get those calls from customers, that no matter which branch they ring or how they ring or how they come to us, they're instantly greeted. They're instantly loved. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, hug the customer, Jeff, have you?
No, not that I can think of.
There's a book somewhere called Hugging the Customer. We actually do hug our customers. So customers come in, we actually give them hugs in a lot of cases. It doesn't always go according to plan, but most of the time people really like it. And we try to make sure that anyone who comes in, luckily enough, thanks to the TV3, thanks to our position on TV over the years, it's been a lot of hard work for no money. But at the same time, it has created a fantastic awareness for our business and a fantastic trust and trustability that we've always been, like your listeners, honest about what we do, what we can, what we can't. We've been fair with pricing and fair with all our dealings. And, you know, when people come to us, our mantra is that we treat everybody. We spoke of our friends and family when we were back in school and we were fixing things for them. We got a great feeling out of it. We were always honest with our friends and family as to what antivirus to use or what they should do or right. where they should go. We've always done that for our customers ever since. Being on TV gave us that credibility that, quite honestly, we deserved, because actually we maintained that honesty and that transparency through everything we did and everything we do. And, I guess it was, not everybody can do that, obviously. Maybe you don't want, you know, some people get nervous when they go on TV. My experience, by the way, of the media, if it's any use to any of your listeners, is that nowadays, and particularly in Ireland, maybe less so in, over there, I don't know, but they're always looking for free contribution. So they're looking for material. They can't make as much money nowadays. They can't sell their advertising space for as much as they used to because they're vying and competing against new online platforms that are more cost effective and more measurable. So they have a lot less money at their disposal, newspapers, radio stations, private TV shows, than they used to. They're delighted to get an expert on to talk about antivirus, to talk to their viewers or listeners or readers about the new iPhone 7. And your listeners can, in cases where they're so inclined, actually ring these places and say, listen, I'm an expert on this. I'd love to talk to your listeners. I'd love to write a piece. Never mind the money involved. I don't need to be paid. I'm happy to do it for you. Maybe we do it on a trial basis for a month. Maybe if it's a Sunday paper, there's a Sunday business paper in Ireland that I write for. Again, I don't get paid, but it takes me about an hour to write a piece every week. And again, it's just another way of funneling business and people who need our services towards us.
I think that's great. You know, it's the same way here nowadays is, a lot of these places are looking for a way to get some sort of newsworthy things, whether it's a gadget list or it's a, you know, what are the scams right now? These types of things. They want those experts, like you said.
Yeah.
They're definitely listeners looking are for that. Them.
Exactly. You know, your listeners are those resident experts in their areas.
Yes.
One of your other friends, I love his tagline. It's I've forgotten his name. The friendly local computer guy. What's his name again?
Oh, Matthew Rodella.
Matthew Rodella, yeah. Fantastic podcast as well. I know you collaborate a lot, and I love that identity of the friendly local computer guy.
Because that's your friendly neighborhood computer guy.
That's it. Sorry. You need to correct it. I warned you at the beginning. I have a terrible memory. And I don't have it written down on my paper. But I love that tagline. And I think that's what all your listeners will probably have an affinity with that expression. That's kind of what they are in their area, in their neighborhood, in their community. And that's something, you know, to be proud of, but also to really, really feed off, exemplify it, encourage it, promote it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of times people will look for, not that all advertising is bad, because I'm not going to say that, because I advertised for many years myself using Google AdWords and things like that. But I think a lot of people are looking to, even nowadays, do bigger ads and stuff like that and pay all this money. And it's like, you could get a hold of somebody in your local newspaper, in your local TV station, and do something for them for free, get the exposure, and it's going to help you out in the long run. Like you said, giving you that credibility And not only that, quite honestly, just being on TV or in a newspaper is going to be cheaper than what you could ever pay them for advertising.
And it could be YouTube. You decide to go, you want to do some videos. It could be podcasts, sure, like yourself. It could be, I know a friend of mine decided he'd write a book on a particular subject. And I kind of felt, well, you'd only a couple of years of experience in the area. And I thought, well, you know, does he really have enough to write the book, and what qualifies him to write the book? But he's halfway through it, and it's a brilliant book, and it's about recruitment and interview skills. And again, the likelihood is that he's not going to get a huge amount of money out of that book or out of selling that book. But the fact is, this is yada yada. He's written the book, blah, 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 about recruitment and interview technique. The fact that you've written a book about something, what does that say? You're an out-and-out expert. Nobody's right. looking at the degrees on the wall or the 20 years of experience or your CV. They just know you wrote the book on the thing, which effectively and anecdotally does mean, well, he must know what he's talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a saying, and I can't remember exactly how it goes, but something, what makes a person an expert is knowing more than the audience that they're talking to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so. And that's I guess that's what we do, and we've done. I suppose what's interesting about our business as well, Jeff, is about our industry, is that it's come along very quickly. A lot of industries, law, medicine, retail, food, service, hygiene, they haven't changed a huge amount, even for my parents, DIY and hardware. Obviously, little, you know, parts of it change, how they work changes. But our industry has erupted in the last effectively only maybe 15 years. I know it's right. longer, even longer for some of your listeners, but certainly and primarily in the last 10 years, if we look at what we had and didn't have versus today, social media wasn't even a word effectively 10 years
right.
ago. Mobile phones were texts and calls. We didn't have, you know, the apps and features we now have on smartphones. 15 years ago, we couldn't have been having this conversation. If we were, it would have cost you or me a load of money.
Exactly.
The advancements now, of course, in AI, in heuristic analyses, in security, in security threats online, is day by day, not year on year. So we have to evolve back to our point about sort of changing and improving on a day-to-day basis. We have to advance our skills, on a day-by-day basis. Our knowledge of our industry, it's something that evolves so quickly. We need to evolve with it.
Absolutely, and I 100% agree with that. And I will say this, is that when you're, there's a lot of things that are foundational to running a business, whatever it is. It could be making cookies. It could be fixing computers. It doesn't really matter. There's a certain set of foundations that are going to be the same. Same with operating systems and different things like that in the computer field. There's a lot of similarities going way back to Windows 95, right? And probably even a little bit before them. But the reality is, we're going to change some of the practices and some of the things we have to do in our businesses on a regular basis, like you said, because we need to know new things that are coming out while still holding on to some of the foundational things we've been doing for a very long time. And quite honestly, we've gotten really, really good at.
Back to your point about niche. Carving out your niche, whether it's you're very good at handling software for mechanics or service stations, or, you know, we've recently in the last year or so carved out a niche, Jeff.
Yes.
In dental surgery.
I love niches.
Anyway. Niche, yeah, I bet you do. I'll give you a niche.
and I'll take a mile. Yeah, I get it.
We've found it in one of them in dental surgery. So we've gotten used to okay. dental practices and the software they use. But we have to be open to those changes. One of my good friends in our industry, actually, he's a distributor of SSDs and RAM and all kinds of things. And he's a one-man band and a 6 or 7 years ago, he was doing a premium brand, Kensington, if you know it.
Okay.
And distributing that across Ireland, and it was great for him. No, it's actually more, it was about 10 years ago. And he was selling laptop cases and USB hubs, premium brand, premium pricing. And I don't know if you know, but about sort of 7 years ago, Ireland hit a recession. Fairly quickly, because we're such a small and open economy. It kind of happened overnight, and we're also very property focused and borrowings focused, so it hit everybody very hard, and suddenly premium priced items became very unpopular, and he was still trying to sell these expensive cases and expensive accessories to laptops, and of course just the market was flooded with cheaper stuff. And he just couldn't see for the wood for the trees. That's what he was used to doing. That was his niche. And he was working so hard, God bless him, that he couldn't really step back and see the changes he needed to make. Sure, he was the best supplier of this product in the country. We went away to Germany for a weekend, got wildly drunk and went to lots and lots of bars. And got the creative juices flowing, and we kind of thought about it. And he realized over the weekend, with the bit of space, he'd been working 6-7 days a week, and this was the first time off he'd had in a while. And he realized that, yeah, that was his niche, but right. He had to carve out a new one. He had to dampen that. He had to put that on the back burner. He had to put it on the higher shelf. And we said, okay, what are you selling, and what will sell, what's in demand, what are stores and labs like ours in Back from the Future, what do we need, and therefore what can he sell us? And we looked at that, and he got into those areas. SSDs are huge. We were the first in Ireland to sort of really push SSD, and now don't do standard hard drives anymore. We only do SSD. And we sort of pushed into RAM upgrades, and we pushed towards buying in larger quantities of things that failed regularly, so MacBook Pro hard drive cables and screens and particular kinds of screens and the likes. And he expanded into that, and I guess for him the business took a turn and it got back on the straight and narrow. And that brings me back to, yes, it's great to discover your niche and always sort of fuel it and develop it, but you've always got to be looking out for new ones, because in our business and in our industry, things change just so quickly, and very, very quickly you could be an Outlook expert or a POP3 email expert or whatever, and suddenly everyone's going cloud and it's not the thing anymore. Maybe you become a partner with AVG or Grysoft or whatever, and suddenly there's a big mishap and they're not doing very well anymore. You've got to be able to change quickly.
Right.
You've got to be nimble, and I guess that's what makes, when they say small is beautiful, what do we have against the big box stores? Well, for the most part, they're not interested in our business, but we have the ability to be agile. Your listeners, we ourselves here, we have the ability to spot something that's coming out, spot something that's not working and not selling anymore, spot something that's causing customers a problem and that we can become very good at solving. Right at the moment, we're watching ransomware and we're solving ransomware problems, and it's coming as quickly as it's as we can handle in terms of new ransomware and new ways of getting onto systems. But we're pushing very hard and in some cases making losses on single cases, because we're involved in learning more about them and becoming the ultimate expert in the country on ransomware and solving that problem, both preventing it and solving it when it happens. So I guess I've found you just constantly need to be open and have an appetite for new ideas. And if you don't, you are running a very, very fine line and very thin ice.
I agree. Wow. I'll tell you what, I have not only rethought some of the things that I do on a regular basis, and I want to talk about, after the show, we'll talk about that supplier, but because I'm interested in something with the Mac parts and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've always found that is one of the things that's a little bit difficult sometimes for us to be able to get a hold of the right parts. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you say something about the hardware or the hard drive cables going bad all the time, because I get those calls. Same thing with the screens, you know, different things like that. So
we all know typical things. You see a HP come in, a laptop that's 4 years old, and it's the screen's not starting. You know it's GPU. You know
Throw it away.
You know you're going to open up, and you know the fans are clogged. Simple as that.
Well, I appreciate you coming out and sharing all this great information with us today. And I will say this, I've had an enjoyable time talking with you. And if people wanted to find out more about you or maybe ask a question or something like that, what's the best way that they could do that?
By email or by Facebook. My name is Colin Baker of Back from the Future. If you actually just go on Google and search Colin Baker TV3 or Colin Baker Back from the Future, you'll funnel into the website or to my email or whatever. My email is colin@backfromthefuture.ie, colin@backfromthefuture.ie. And I have a huge appetite for it because, look, Jeff, I've been through so much and I've made so many blunders and mistakes. And, you know, back to our point about, you know, what we can do to make a positive impression on the world. I guess that's why a lot of people, a lot of your listeners went into the business they went into. Yes, there's a commercial reality. There's a financial gain. There's a, you know, I can do this. It's a skill. I can sell it. But there's also that feeling that you really, you're having a positive effect on the world around you. You're repairing. You're fixing. You're bringing about solutions. You're making people happy. You're saving the day for some for some businesses and users. For me, there's the added bonus of not just learning a little bit more over the years about my own business and being able to, I suppose, stave off future problems and being a little bit sturdier than we were before. And thank God we are. We're very business is very, very good these days. And I'm very, very fortunate to say that, and touch wood, as we say in Ireland. But actually being able to give back and help people along the way that potentially have been through similar problems to those that I've been through. Much as I look to my predecessors or my colleagues for advice and support and ideas, I'm very, very keen and willing and enthusiastic about providing my tuppence worth to whoever needs it as well. So definitely, as regards any of your listeners who have any questions at all, please find me, Colin Baker, Back from the Future, TV3. Say colin@backfromthefuture.ie, or you'll find me on Facebook. And I'm actually looking forward to anyone who might want to engage.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. And we'll definitely have links in the show notes for that. So we'll have all that information for you guys to click on and get a hold of Colin. You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show like Colin was, email me at guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network the next time you're shopping in Amazon. Go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.